like anything else. If we were to learn it the way we learn generally, we would take Haggadah with Perusim, and we would get Mamakomos and look at every Rishon and the Medayik. Okay, we're not doing it that way. We're just trying to get a bit of a flavor to get comfortable. I'm stating the obvious, but I think it should be stated. One of the essential parts of the Haggadah is, of course, this section of Tzeil Mad. Typically, when you're younger, you don't realize the significance of it. It just sounds very meandering, you know. Mashinemar, it's like, you know, we've already gone through the Arabanim, like, what is this exactly? But this is a critical part of the Haggadah, as is Rabbi Gamliel, which comes afterwards. The Gemara, the Mishnah, tells us that Doresh Mirami Ovidavi, part of the way that the mitzvah of Sipur was structured by Chazal, was to use the section in the Chumash of the Parsha of Mikra Bichurim, and to use it to expound on Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim through the lens of this section. So again, this should be clear to everybody, but it's always good to know this, and especially if you're at a table and not everybody around you is familiar with this, so you should obviously make sure that people know what's going on. There are a number of psukim that appear in Parshas Kisavo in connection to Mikra Bikurim. We choose four of those psukim, and we darshan, we expound. Originally, when the farmer comes, the first thing he says is, Higadati hayom l'Hashem Elokecha. So that we don't use for the Haggadah, although the word Higadati does certainly associate with the notion of Haggadah we mentioned yesterday from Avudram. Higadati means Shevach, the praise. Then it says in the Pasuk, V'anisa v'amarta l'fnei Hashem Elokecha. You shall recite in a loud voice, and you shall say, Arami, Oved Avi, and so on, Vayeri Mitzrayma. That's the first pasuk that we're going to be darshaning, from the words Arami, Oved Avi. Then that describes Yaakov's descent to Mitzrayim. And then the next pasuk is Vayareyosim Harmitzim Vayanunu, Vayitun Levad Akasha, which describes the servitude of Mitzrayim, the suffering in Mitzrayim. The third pasuk is Vanitzak El Hashem El Kevaseinu, how we cried out and Hashem heard our cries. That's the third pasuk after he begins to speak, you know, in, as he brings the Bikurim. And then, that Hashem heard our cries, and Vayotzei Hashem Mitzrayim B'yad Chazaka B'Shem Margadu Osus Amofsim. That's as far as we go in the Haggadah. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and every expression we expound on. Many of the drushes that we have in the Haggadah are found in the Sifrei, which is Medrash of the Tanoim. What happens in Mikra Bikurim is, the next pasuk brings it in terms of the specific context of what he's doing there, coming to Yerushalayim, by the Enu El HaMakom Hazeh. That we don't do at the Seder, for obvious reasons, because we're talking about a Seder that was performed, you know, in the Leil Pesach, nothing to do with coming back to Eretz Yisrael. We're not in Eretz Yisrael yet. To the extent that we acknowledge Eretz Yisrael, we acknowledge it in Dayenu. Maybe that's sort of the missing link that we didn't do in Arami Ovid Avi. We talk about Vana Lanu is Beis HaBechira, so we talk about coming to Eretz Yisrael, Chnisanu Eretz Yisrael, Vana is Beis HaBechira. So in that regard, we make mention of the idea of Eretz Yisrael and this Beis HaMikdash. But in the connection to Arami Ovid Avi, we stop short of that pasuk. And then, of course, the pasuk that follows is specific to Mikra Bikurim, Ba'ata Hinehe Beisi, Hesvashis Priya Adama. So what we did is we took four psukim from the six psukim that are mentioned at Mikra Bikurim, and we take each pasuk, we quote the whole pasuk. In the Ram's Haggadah, the pasuk is not quoted in the beginning, we just go phrase by phrase. The way our Haggadah has it, we quote the pasuk in its entirety, and then we repeat phrase by phrase, and each time the phrase is mentioned, we say something about that phrase. And then we finish darshaning that pasuk, we go to the next pasuk, and so on. This should be very obvious to everybody. Chazal obviously had a reason why they chose this section to be incorporated within Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And there are many nice ideas that can be thought about why this section is appropriate. We already alluded yesterday to the notion of Hakaras HaTov. Mikra Bikurim, and Bikurim itself is an expression of Hakaras HaTov. That mindset is what we're bringing to the Seder. We're appreciating what Hashem did for us. That is why, as we noted from the Maral, we're not in violation of Mimal Vrus Hashem Hashmiya Kol Tehillaso, of overstepping our bounds, of singing Hashem's praises, Ki'ilu, that's all there is, because we're not doing it for the sake of just the Meshabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If that were the case, we have to be steering in our praise, because otherwise it sounds like, you know, we've exhausted everything. We're not doing it from that perspective. We're doing it from the perspective of a Karas HaTov, which is what Bikurim is all about. And to that extent, we say whatever we could to feel that we're appreciative. That's obviously one very important motif that's common to Bikurim and also Sipri Tzius Mitzrayim. Al Derech Remez, the Or Sameach, points out that since it says in the Pasuk Lechem Oni, and Shmuel's drasha was Lechem She'onim L'Avdorim Harveh, so that means Hallel, it means Haggadah. Now Dvarim Harveh doesn't say what, but it says Lechem Oni, Lechem She'onim Olav, says the Neshech Chachma, in a classic Neshech Chachma fashion, the Anisa V'Amarta. The Pasuk here, introducing the Bikurim, is the Lashon is the Anisa, you should recite. So maybe the Torah saying Lechem Oni is meant to allude to that for this parsha where it says the Anisa, which tells us to use this parsha as a springboard for the discussion. I once saw in the Malbim Haggadah that, and it's a simple idea, that basically, you know, if you start with the parshas in Shmos Va'era Bo, you can get lost. It's so much there. You know, how are you going to anchor your sipur? So it makes perfect sense that if you wish to be able to develop a Sipri Tzius Mitzrayim, use a structure where you have a base, you have an anchor, you have a few sukkim that speak succinctly about what happened, how we went down to Mitzrayim, how we suffered over there, how we cried out, and how Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and then use that as your base to launch into a discussion, so that you take each phrase and let's discuss it. Let's take the idea that lies within that phrase. And then we can go off to Pesukim all over it, all over Tanakh. Many of them, of course, in Parshas Shmos Va'era Bo, which are the narrative of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But then after our discussion about that idea, so where do we go from there? You know, you can go anywhere. The answer is we go back to our anchor, which is the Pesukim in Kisavo, and then we discuss another idea. So it just gives an opportunity to structure the sipur with a certain orientation. That's what Malbim says in his Haggadah. So that's also why Chazal felt this is a good way to allow for the Sipri Tzius Mitzrayim. These are all very simple ideas, which I think, just to be clear to everybody. So how do we segue into Arameh Ovid Avi? Now this is interesting. This is where V'hisha Amda becomes a very interesting fulcrum in the Haggadah. Because V'hisha Amda is one of those paragraphs that in a way linked to before and linked to afterwards. The Isha Amda is like positioned at the Seder and the Magid so that it's clearly referring back to what we just talked about, as we discussed yesterday in Shir, that the mention before was Baruch Shem after Chasal Yisrael, Hashem kept his promise to Avram Avinu. Hashem promised Avram Avinu about Yitzias Mitzrayim, as we discussed in the Shavu Elerket. Hashem promised Avram Avinu about Gula Asida. Hashem promised that I'm going to save you and your children from whatever harm, whatever enemies will come to attack them. And the Hisham, the Labusin Velanu, that's exactly what we say. That the Bispin Absarim stood for us in good stead. And Kadosh Baruch Hu sees to it, no matter who comes against us, he's going to save us. So the Hisha Amda is clearly linked to the previous paragraph. But it's also a segue into the next paragraph, because now that we're about to dash in Arameh Ovid Avi, so the very first phrase talks about Laban, who wanted to destroy Yaakov. As we know, the simple idea is when he pursued Yaakov, thinking that he was going to kill everybody, his own grandchildren, he had the right to do what he wanted. He was completely berserk, you might say. Yaakov left without permission. Yaakov had to leave. He was told that Kadosh Baruch Hu, you have to go. Laban was intent on killing everybody. And Hashem appears, Hivchata Rami Be'emesh Laila, we say in the Piyut later in the Haggadah, Yibach Tia Laila, things that happened in El Pesach. One of the things, it says with the Laila, it doesn't say El Pesach, but now you have to figure it out. Maybe it was, maybe it was just Stananite. But Hivchata Rami, Hashem terrorized Laban and said, you better not do a thing to Yaakov. But yeah, he was intent on killing Yaakov. And so Arameh Ovid Avi is interpreted by Chazal as a reference to Lavan's intention to kill Yaakov. Some have shown him take it not just in that particular sense of that evening when he was pursuing Yaakov, but also the whole experience of Yaakov in Beis Lavan was one where Yaakov was being seduced by Lavan to commit avodah zarah, to do all kinds of things which would utterly destroy him spiritually. So that's also Rabbi Ovid Avi. So in order to bring that point home, Rabbi Ovid Avi, that Lavan Bikesh Lakos HaKol, in whatever sense, so we say Tzei Lamad. Now Tzei Lamad can be understood in different parts and say different ways, but I think they're all true. Tzei Lamad can be a way of trying to speak to the issue that we're about to say, that the question we're posing. Think about the following. Consider the following. Ma bikesh Lavan lasus Yaakov Avinu. And in that regard, you could even see as Lavan as harsher than Paro. Why do we have to belittle, you know, make light of Paro's vicious? I don't know, right? But basically, Lavan is now being, you know, demonized. Bikesh Gakas HaKol. But we want to do this in order to really segue to Rabbi Ovid Avi. That's the Tzei Lamad. But as some refer to, and Tzei Lamad is a Lashon of Chazal. You find it in various places, the Haggadah Shlema, maybe they quote other Haggadahs exactly where you find it, different places in Midrashim and in Gemaras. But the other idea is Tzei Lamad is an introduction to the whole section that we're about to embark on. Tzei Lamad is, let's expound, let's sit together and study Medrash Chazal. Let's study the Psukim in Kisavo. Let's analyze. So let's expound. Tzei Lamad is not just the Mabikesh. Tzei Lamad is a way of framing this whole section of the Haggadah that we're getting into. How does the first phrase that we're darshening, Mabikesh Lavan Lasus Yaakov Vinu Arami Ovid Avi, how does that connect to the Hisha Amda? It also does. This is how the Hisha Amda stands as a bridge between what's before it and what's after it. As the Gra and others note, and we've shown him already, that the bris, some Rishonim say it this way, bris ben apsarim, and what's described there about the children of Avram going to Mitzrayim, you might say, and coming out to Chush Gadol, was foreshadowed with Yaakov Avinu in Laban's house. Yaakov Avinu was in Laban's house, and he was subjugated, and he was oppressed, and he prospered nonetheless. Ba'isham Ligoi, so to speak, in his own family type of a way, Ba'ipot Se'ish Ma'od Ma'od, but then again, he was chased out, Ruchosh Gadol. So, his experience, say some of the Rishonim, you look in the Haggadahs, you'll see, that his experience foreshadowed Klal Yisrael Mitzrayim, and part of Bris Bin Absarim was Avtacha for Yaakov himself. Now, the Gra says a different point. The Gra says that the point here is that that which b'chol dov ador omdu m'chaloseinu and HaKadosh Baruch Ma'asrim b'yadam is not just in the obvious way that we recognize the Hatzala of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you see Scud missiles falling from wherever, you know, whether it was in the first Gulf War, whether it was a few years ago from Gaza, and you see the, you know, how few casualties there were, you see Yad HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you see the enemy's intention to cause, you know, annihilation, cause destruction, to cause injuries indiscriminately, and you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in some ways like the enemy Adam, obviously. But it's not just the obvious, it's even in the less obvious that nobody even knows, because the scheming continues all the time, and who knows how many plans are nipped in the bud, how many you know, mishaps occurred that never allowed the plans to come to fruition. HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzilenu miyadam. And this is what we see with Lavan. With Lavan, we only know his intention from the fact that he spoke afterwards and he says, Yeshi el yadi lasasi machem ra, I could have done harm to you. But Hashem, your God, appeared at night and told me, don't do a thing. So that's how we know it. It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saving us without our even recognizing that he was doing this. We're beneficiaries of Hashem's kindness without even being aware of it. And that's the notion of a Keshbroch Matzileinu Miyadam, even to that extent. And that's what you see as well with love. That's what the Gra said. There's a pshat that they bring from Chaim V'lajiner on the Pasuk in Hallel. Hallel is Hashem Kol Goyim. Sabchul kol ha'umim ki gavar aleinu chaska. So what does it mean that the nations are going to praise Hashem because Hashem was so overwhelming with kindness toward us? That means we should thank Hashem for the nations. So the Gemara, Pesachim asked the question, gives an answer. Chaim B'Lashma gave a different answer. He says that sometimes it's only the nations that are in a position to praise Hashem because they're aware of the chesed, ki gavar aleinu chaska. We're not even aware of it. So we thank Hashem and we know that there's a Shemira. Okay, so these are ideas that you can share and that certainly go very beautifully with the theme of Pesach and Akaras HaTov and bring us into Rami Ovid Avi. And now we quote the whole Pasuk. Having mentioned this Pasuk, now we're into it now. Again, the Parul Gazal Ascharim requires an explanation exactly why we contrasting, love and Taparo right now. That requires an explanation. You have to look a little bit in the Mefarshim and see why are we minimizing Paro, as it were. Paro was certainly no tzaddik. In fact, that the Ramban is a question that was bothering me at some level. The Ramban makes a point of saying in Chumash in several places, in Lech Lecha, on the Pasuk Dan Anochi, also in Yisro, Yisidu Alehem, and also in he says it also, it all goes together. The Ramban says that the Mitzrim are to be punished, even though Hashem decreed that we be slaves. So why are they punished? The famous question. So who knows the answer, the Ramban? What is the answer?
Too harsh.
They went overboard. They went beyond. Now that's what everybody quotes, which is partly correct. They went beyond. But if you look at the Ramban carefully, there's another point that he makes as part of this explanation. I don't have the Ramban, I haven't had it, but I don't have time to look it all up for you right now, but the Ramban says what their intention was genocide. Havan Eschak Malo was a way that the genocide should not be noticed and apparent, because he felt like he couldn't go openly and say, this is my ambition, this is what I want to achieve. It would have had too much pushback, Kal Yisrael would have pushed back, even Mitzrim could have pushed back, it would have looked very bad for Paro. So Paro had an agenda of obliterating Kal Yisrael, says Ramban. That's what he writes. Therefore their motive was clearly, it wasn't just that he went more than what Hashem decreed, it was indicative of the fact that his agenda was to totally obliterate Kal Yisrael, which was not what Hashem wanted. It was a different agenda from Hashem's agenda. Hashem's agenda was not to afflict them, not to destroy them entirely. And Paro's agenda, says the Ramban, was genocide. So I was wondering how that squares with this run of the Haggadah. Said Paro is a Gazar al-Ascharim. Now, it could be that by Gazar al-Ascharim, that was how he was ultimately going to get to where he wanted to go. But Sof Kol Sof, what he was doing at this point was only limited. But his agenda was also Akas HaKof, and the Ramban is clear. So, something to think about. So we quote the whole Pasuk, and now that we had Rami Ovid Avi discussed, now we go through the rest of the Pasuk. But now, you'll notice something interesting, which, again, I'm not going to give you the answers to, but you can also think about this and look around. You'll notice different ways that the drushes appear in the Haggadah. Sometimes there'll be a comment. With a cross reference, and when you have a cross reference to another pasuk, you sometimes see the word shenemar, and you'll sometimes find which words? Kimashenemar. The Malbim Haggadah, if I'm not mistaken, is very sensitive to this. What's the difference between shenemar, kimashenemar, or just simply a statement? But obviously, there must be a difference. The first thing we have is Vayered Mitzrayma. And we don't really quote another pasuk; we simply comment on it. Anos al pi adibur, which is a way of saying that Yaakov Avinu was pressured to go down. Al pi adibur would mean that Hashem Baruch Hu had decreed with Avram Avinu's bismat tzarim. That's one way to read it. Al pi adibur. The Gemara tells us that Yaakov should have gone down b'shal shalosh shel barzel. The decree would have been fulfilled in a very undignified way with chains, but because Hashem did things in a way which would cushion the blow, Yosef was in Mitzrayim and the Mishneh LeMelech, and because of that, Yaakov's descent had a certain dignity to it. But nonetheless, he would have preferred not to go. That's why he was assured, Al-Tir Mer de Mitzrayim, Hashem guaranteed that it would work out. But Anas Al-Piyad Dibur. But notice, we don't really quote another pasuk. We just comment as we do. The question is, how do you see this in the pasuk? Do you see in Vayeri Mitzrayim that was an Anas? Exactly how do you see it in the pasuk? You need to think about exactly how we get this. Now, Vayogar Sham, okay, I'll tell you something before this. I'll tell you something from the Talmud of the Grub, Pinchas Miplotsk. This is just total drush, but it's nice. Anyway, it is nice. Al-Pi HaDibur, he says, what caused Yaakov to go to Mitzrayim? Vayavi Yosef es dibasam ra el avia. What caused the rift between the brothers, which led to Yosef's being sold as an Eved? The Lashon Hara. So it was Al-Pi HaDibur, not referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decree. That's the truth, that's the pasuk. But the Dibur is the Dibur of Lashon Hara. Yeah, that's another way to read it. Okay. Vayogar Sham tells us that Yaakov's intention from the very beginning was never to remain in Mitzrayim. His intention was to just be a sojourner, as he quotes the pasuk for this, Shenemar, the pasuk in Vayigash, when they tell Paro that we're just here temporarily. Now, of course, one can ask a question, but didn't Yaakov know that there was a Bishbin Aksarim, there was a decree that you're going to be there Abimeir Shana, so even Abimeir Shana goes back to Leidas Yitzchak, that still gives you 210 years, so how can it be only Lager Sham, only for short duration? I mean, he knew it was going to be a long call. So what can you say? Maybe he knew that, but he also had a mindset. His mindset was, even if he knows time-wise it's going to take time, but his mindset was just to be a visitor, never to assimilate. So that's the Lashon Hishtakeya. Hishtakeya is the Lashon, the Shoresh is Shin Kuf Ayin. What does Shin Kuf Ayin mean? Shakua. You see, we want to be Shakua and learning. What does Shakua mean? What is Shkiyas Achama? Set. Where else do you have that word in the Haggadah? The Dayenu. You have one of the Dayenus. What does it say in the Dayenu? Shin Kuf Ayin? Nobody? Can't find it? Don't have that Shoresh in the Dayenu? Who can find it?
Shika
Sareno Besocho. To sink. Shkia, the sun setting. It was not Lihishtakea. Tishtakea means totally to be a mitzvi, to be an Egyptian, to be completely enmeshed in the culture. That's the difference. Of course, he might have to be there for a while, that was a decree, but it was, the mindset was by Yogosham, always to be a gear, to be an outsider. That's the Ein Yaakov, the Betach Bada Ein Yaakov. The vision of Yaakov is one of recognizing that we're different. In Amu Bada Yishko. That was Yaakov's intent. To some extent he was successful, even though in many ways you say he wasn't, in that regard that gradually Kal Yisrael did assimilate. But as we'll soon see, there were certain distinctive features of Klal Yisrael that remained apparent, that everybody could see, that's a Jew. And those trappings, even if you could say they were somewhat superficial, Loshinu es Shemam, Loshinu es Mabusham, Loshinu es Shoshonam, and yet at the same time they were over the Avodah Zarah. But nevertheless, those external trappings, those, you might say, cultural dimensions, kept them in some ways from totally assimilating. And that was Yaakov's vision to begin with. With just a few in number, we quote Kimashin Emar, that is, the Pasuk in Ekev, that you came to Shiv Nefesh. The Malbim, I believe, says that Kimashin Emar doesn't really add anything to the Pasuk here, it's just simply a reference for itself. Shem Emar means there's something in the second Pasuk that sheds light on the first Pasuk. Now you have to go figure out why, in some cases, there is something more that to be added, in other cases, it's not. Vayhi Sham Ligoy, there's a question here of Girsa, Ligoy, Ligoy Gadol, but there's something in this Pasuk is teaching us, Melameh, this goes back to the similar style of the first Rasha. Melameh Shelo Yorad, right? Melameh. This teaches us It doesn't have a cross-reference. It just speaks for itself. There's nothing to quote beyond this pasuk. This pasuk is where it is. It's the headquarters. There's nothing to go off to. He sham l'goy. They were distinctive. Maybe from the sham, maybe from the goy. There's something that stood out about Klal Yisrael. Mitzuyanim sham. In what sense? Okay, so the Rishonim have different ideas. The Ritvah says that they gathered in cities. But what others say is what we just mentioned a minute ago, that there were certain things that Klal Yisrael remained distinctively Jewish and defined by, specifically their language and their dress and their names. So that's the Hisham Legoy. Rav David Feinstein mentioned a very cute remez. Remember those of us who went to hear him pointed out that the mem of sham and the shin of sham and the lamed of goy, vahi sham legoy, shin mem lamed, is Rashi Tevos, what? The three things, shmam, mabusham, lisham. That's a nice remez in the three letters, shin mem lamed. That was this year. Yeah. Gadol Atzum. They were Gadol Atzum. Now Kimashin Emar. That's a cross reference. The pasuk in the beginning of Parsha Shmos that they were great and they multiplied. Now we have Barav. So we dash in that one. What's Barav? Barav. We quote a pasuk in Yecheskel, but we quote actually two psukim, but in reverse order. If you look in Yecheskel, you'll see this. There is the pasuk. That's actually the pasuk that follows. Now, apparently, what we have here is the following. What we're trying to bring out is the idea of varav. So, varav, we quote the pasuk nisatich, and the symbol. Some Rishonim explain is just like when you have the tzemach hasada, the grass. So you cut it, and it comes right back. Anything, the more you cut it, the quicker it comes back. And this was Klal Yisrael, even though they were being persecuted, but Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the bracha, the kasha ya'anu oso, ken yirbe v'chen yifrots. The more that the mitzvah tried to push us down, the more Hashem gave the bracha that they actually procreated a greater degree. In fact, the Ramban mentions in Chumash in one place that the Levim had a fewer population, had less than all the other Shvatim. We know 22,000 something were the Levim, and all the other Shvatim were far more. The Ramban explains, because since Chazal say that the Levim did not serve Avodas Perach in Mitzrayim, so they never had the bracha of Kasher Ya'anu Oso Ken Yirbe V'Chen Yifrots. Therefore, their numbers were like to be expected. And everyone else had much greater numbers because of the fact that they were also persecuted. So that's the Vava Kitzema Chasad Nesatiyah, that the just like the grass keeps coming back after you cut it, so will Klal Yisrael. That's the varav, the idea of varav that we're bringing. But now, you see, what did we do? We didn't want to end the quote with the At Erem Ve'erida, which is a derogatory, disparaging description of Klal Yisrael, which of course means spiritually, you're spiritually naked. Right? So what did we do? We took the pasuk that came before. We couldn't start with that because we want to quote varav, we want to darshan the word varav. But after we quoted the pasuk Ravot Semachasada, now we go back a pasuk in Yecheskel to the previous pasuk. The Everach Erech Mitzvoseshes B'damayich. I saw you rolling in with your blood. The Amalach with your blood Chayi B'damayich Chayi, which Chazal also dash in a connection to Dam Pesach and Dam Milah. So it's appropriate, and we end on a high note. We don't end on a low note. That in the area. So that's where we go back a pasuk, and we do it that way. There's a beautiful thought of the Meshech Chachma, again, somewhere in the Meshech Chachma, I don't remember where, in terms of this pasuk in Yecheskel, the first pasuk that we quoted here, pasuk Vava Kitzema Chasad Nisatich. What is being described here? Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim. Now, Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim about Erem Ve'eriya, spiritually naked. I mean, they had no mitzvahs. That's why they had to have something to be redeemed with. They had to have the schus of Pesach. Hashem had to give them something. That's the Rashi in Parshas Bo that quotes this. Masya ben Charash, Rashi quotes in Parshas Bo when Hashem said to take the Karban Pesach. Rashi quotes a beautiful idea. Harehu Omer, v'ever leich v'erech mispossessus v'damayich in ha'iteche his dodim, higiyah shvosh and ishvati l'abram she'egal esbana v'lo yibi other mitzvos l'sasek b'hem, k'dei she'yigalu, sh'nem v'at erim v'erya. So he gave them shtei mitzvos, na Pesach and damila. V'asho yishtufim v'avodus kachavim, amal ha'mishchu k'chuachem, mishchu me'avodazara, k'chuachem so'n'so mitzvah. Says the Meshach Chachma, something very interesting. So they were in the area. They were spiritually naked. They were of the Avodah Zarah. They were totally acculturated, totally assimilated. But as the Cheska described them at the same time, you were of age, you had matured, Shadayim Nechonu, Sarech Tzimeach, but also Batavoy Ba'adi Adoyim. Now Adi Adoyim is a reference to jewelry. Edyam, Edi is jewelry. That means that he's describing them as wearing jewelry. We have jewelry. But there's something incongruous about wearing jewelry if you're wearing no clothing or shmatis. You know, if you wear a nice, fine garment and then you have, you know, jewelry on top of that, then you're talking about a nice compliment, you know, to the clothing. Now you have the jewelry. But if there's no clothing, what's the point of jewelry? So how could you talk about Adi Adoyim and then say at Erem Ve'erya? It doesn't match. So he says, but what's the idea? And what's the nimshel here? Kai Yisrael were Ovdi Avodah Zarah. They were assimilated. They were Erem Ve'erya. They were Arom Min HaMitzvos. But what did they have? They had jewelry. What the icing on the cake? What is that? Shiloshinu es Shemam. Shiloshinu es Rishonu. Shiloshinu es Babush. They were holding on to certain cultural trappings that connected them in some way to their Masorah. They kept the Jewish names, they kept their Jewish dress, and they kept their mother tongue, but in other ways they were totally assimilated. How do you look at such a thing? So if you really want to be cynical, you could say, this is totally hypocritical, this is ridiculous, there's no point, we have a value system, we understand this only makes sense if you have the basics, and to that extent, it's a good point. Legitimate critique. But there's another side to this. Because Lumaisa, what kept them going? This is something which I think is important to recognize even in the world around us today. The fact that they held on to what they held on to, even if it was trivial in comparison to the basics, it at least kept them in some way from totally going over the abyss. Sometimes you never know what it is that keeps a Jew connected to the Yiddishkeit. It could be the most trivial thing. You know, rabbis will sometimes get shyless about things which are like chumas and chumas and chumas, and yet a person's not even eating kosher, you know. I remember growing up in the Lower East Side, I used to see Rosh Hashanah going to Tashkach on the river, the East River Drive. Everyone would go down to Tashkach. Everyone means not just the Jews that kept Shabbos. Everyone meant everybody. People who are from, people who weren't from, but somehow Tashlich was something that they remembered from the mother, whatever. So on the one hand, you could laugh and say, what do they really know? You know, this is really a minhag that knew, whatever. But then again, you never know. You never know what can come of it. You never know how it keeps you going. So this is Kaisa. Kaisa Mitzvayim, where it was not exactly a good match to be holding on to Chumras, Siyagim, and at the same time to Yom Yavod Zara. But yet, this was a schus that they had. And that's the image in the Cheska. At Erem Be'eriya, but Tavod Badi Adayim. So you never know. You have to look at it from different perspectives. That's the Meshachah. Okay. So that completes the first of the four psukim that we're going to dash. Now, before dashing phrase by phrase of the second pasuk, so our Nusach has the whole pasuk quote in its entirety. And now we're going to take it apart and dissect it and analyze. So the first phrase, and we quote the pasuk in Rashi Shmos, Havanis Chakmalo. So the obvious question is, how does this pasuk speak to Vayireyosan HaMitzvim? You would imagine Vayireyosan HaMitzvim is that they harmed us. What you have in this pasuk is the scheming that Vayomer Lamo, we have to do something about the Jewish problem. Let's figure out what to do. So how does that parallel the pasuk by Yireus and Lamitzvim, which would seem to refer to the mitzvah actually harming us? And Rishonim say this, and others, many others say the same idea, that it shows us that the interpretation of Yireus and Lamitzvim is not what we thought. It doesn't mean that they harmed us. It means that they demonized us. They made us bad. They perceived us as bad people. And that's really why the words are Vayirei Osanu HaMitzvim. If it were to mean that they harmed us, the word would not be Osanu, but Vayirei Ulanu HaMitzvim, to direct their harm to us. Vayirei Osanu means they portrayed us as being bad people. And that's exactly what you have in this pasuk, that Paro is saying they're a threat to us. We have to do something about them. They're going to take over the land. They'll join with their enemies, and that's exactly why Vayirei Osanu HaMitzvim, referring to Havanas Chachma. Many Rishonim say this idea. Vayanunu, and they afflicted us, and we have the pasuk that describes how the Mitzvim put us to work. Leman Anoso, we said, look, they set taskmasters in order to afflict us. Pointed out by Netziv maybe and others, that the agenda of the Mitzvim wasn't necessarily to get productive labor out of us. The agenda was to be sadistic about our hardship. In other words, they got a thrill for the fact that we were suffering. So it wasn't even for the purpose of getting, they got benefits from our work. But it was more about just the mana noso bisiblosa. That's the focus, that's their purpose. That's why maybe the Ari Miskinos of Pharaoh were Pisam and Ramses. Chazal say they were set up on a fault line, which means that every so often there'd be an earthquake and everything would have to be rebuilt again. If you want to have storehouses that are going to work for you, you don't want to have them built on a fault line and you're going to have to rebuild it. But the answer is they wanted us to feel frustrated by the fact that they have to go again and start from scratch. And that also fits with the next pasuk that we quote, Avoda Kasha, which we quote the pasuk of the farach. The pshut of shel mikra is the farach is back-breaking labor, crushing work. Chazal say there's another example of that is that they would change jobs that men traditionally would do, and they give them the women those jobs, and they would take women's jobs and give them to men, so that there would be a feeling of frustration. At least if you do something that you feel you're attuned to do, so at least you know you feel productive in that way. When you're doing something that's simply not your thing, it's only going to feel worse. So that was part of what they wanted to accomplish in terms of frustrating our, you know, our emotions, and that's the farach as well. So that's the second pasuk. Now this is a key pasuk on many levels. This pasuk is a turning point. So we are suffering and we cried out. And this is the pasuk, Vanitzak el Hashem, okay, we say nu. We cried out, Vayish Mashem es koleinu, Vayar sanyenu, Amalenu achaseinu. We're going to dissect this pasuk. The first phrase, we cried out, and we quote the pasuk in Shemos. And it was, Vayom Rav Nahem, Vayom Es Melch Yitzrayim, and Bnei Yisrael was sighing, Vayizaku, Vatal Shavasim Elkim in Ha'avoda. We cannot overestimate the significance of this idea that Klal Yisrael were not, in a sense, worthy, and yet we cried out, and Hashem heard our prayer. The Ramban makes this point very clearly in his Peirush and Chumash, both in Shmos and in Bo. The Ramban on the Pasuk, B'yarukim es b'nei Yisrael, that we're going to quote in a minute, the Ramban says that until now Hashem, so to speak, was concealing his countenance from us, and now he heard our prayers. And the Ramban explains that there were many factors that contributed to Klal Yisrael's redemption. Because really, you needed those factors. Ki apal pi, I mean from the Ramban in Pasuk, Perek Beis, Pasuk Chav Hei in Shmos. Ki apal pi shenishlam hazman shegazer aleim. On the one hand, the time was up. Okay, however you count 400 years, the time was up. But, lohoi ru'im ligoyal. They weren't worthy. Ki moshe meforash ha'ideh Yecheskel, as we talked before about Yecheskel, the psukim over there, in Perikhaf and Yecheskel, the various psukim describe Klal Yisrael's spiritual, low spiritual level. Ela b'pnei hatza'aka kibel tefilasam b'rachamam, says the Ramban, but because of the crying out, Hashem accepted the tefillah. So you see, they weren't worthy, but tefillah mattered, tefillah counted. Even if there weren't merits, there weren't zechuyos. That's in Parshas Shmos, in Parshas bow, the Ramban elaborates even more. The Ramban actually says something very big chiddush. He says that it's possible that Kali still ended up staying in Mitzrayim a little longer than they would have. And the reason was because of their chatayim. Maybe that's the extension of the 30 years, 430 instead of 400, says Ramban, was because Kali Yisrael were not ready after 400. They earned, I shouldn't say earned, they deserve now an extra 30 years. But anyway, the Ramban says over there, it's known, he writes.
Where is that?
In Parshas Bo, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Mem Beis, after discussing different possibilities for the 400, 430, he says, I think the best pshat of all is that Gzeru was 400 years, but the extra 30 was Tosefes Ba'avon Hador Hahu. Says the Ramban, if a person will be imprisoned for a particular offense for a year or two, and while in prison they commit another crime, so you can tell me, no, there's no extension to the sentence because your sentence is what it is, or now you can be tried for the next crime, and now you're going to have to pile it onto the sentence and remain even longer. Of course. Just because you have one punishment doesn't mean if you do another thing wrong, you're not going to get punished for that. So Avraham Avinu was told the Kali Yisrael that this is the sentence. But it also says, I'll take them out, assuming that they deserve, that they haven't done anything wrong. Umin hayodua, says the Ramban, I'm reading here, Shahayu Yisrael b'mitzrayim ra'im b'chatoyim ma'od u'bitru gam hamila. The Siv, and he quotes Psukim from Tanakh. Vayamru bi, this is in Yechezkel, Perikrof, that same kapitel in Yechezkel. Vayamru bi v'lov v'lishmoa elai ish es shikutze inehem and so on lo yisrichu v'eskiru b'mitzrayim lo azavu Hashem. That's the pasuk in Yeshua. The Alken Arach Galusam Shloshim Shana. The Ramban says they had to stay an extra 30 years in Mitzrayim because of that. It should have been even more. Ella Shetzaku Behirbu Tefillah. Again, the secret of Tefillah. Because of the crying, and all the various psukim that describe how Hashem heard our cries, it wasn't that the kates was the reason for the geula. For the Ramban here, he refers back to what he says in Shmos. But this is why this pasuk is quite important in the scheme of things. It was this crying out that turned, you know, the tide for us. Vayishma Elokim, Vanitzak El Hashem, Vayishma Hashem Es Kolenu, as the pasuk says, Vayishma Elokim Es Na'akasim. Na'akasim is like a groan. It's as described by some Mefarshim, when Kaiser cried out, it was a very unsophisticated feel, very primitive. When a person has presence of mind, and they pray, and that's how we should be davening, with a sense of cognitive awareness of Ne'amakom, and we have halachas, how we should prepare to daven, and how we should position ourselves, and how we should organize our prayer. We have this, the Seder Tefillah, you start with Shevach, you go to Bakasha, you end with Hodah, you order the Bakashas a certain way, and that's obviously the ideal way to daven. When a person is experiencing the suffering that they're experiencing, the Kaiso Mitzrayim, there was no place for that kind of a tefillah. It couldn't happen. They didn't think in those terms. So what was it? It was a krach. It was a moan. It was a groan. It was just, you know, save me. You wouldn't even call it a tefillah. It was just somehow, but it was an expression of their suffering. And it was directed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in whatever way they understood that there was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was what their prayer was all about. And that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took and accepted and responded to. That's why we say, Vatal Shavasim Elokim Inu Avoda. It was just a crying about the Avoda. It was not what ideal tefillah is supposed to be. But that's the power of tefillah. Even a tefillah which is undeveloped, unrefined, primitive, and yet it carried the weight and it pierced the heavens. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded. That's what you see here. And he saw so many details of the suffering, even more than we realize. That's the last part of the pasuk. So each part of the pasuk expression is defined. Anyenu, what is it referred to? Anyenu precious derech eretz. We know that the mitzvim interrupted family life. Some say it has to do with the gzeira that Paro made the gzeira about the children. So Amram was a gadol hador, decreed that the men and women should separate. That's why he and Yocheved separated. He said he did it, and everyone followed suit. So that could be precious derech eretz. It could be just because they were working all day. They could not. They're working day and night. They didn't have any appetite, if you will, for anything more. So precious derech eretz. And yet we have midrashim that tell us that was how the women got the men to have children. That was what the kiyor was meant to, you know, to symbolize. All kinds of midrashim about how the Kari Yisrael had children despite the hardships of the servitude. But Kadosh Baruch Hu saw that suffering. Vayeda Elokim. Only Hashem could see that. It was private. It was intimate. The Samoleinu is the children put in the efforts, and then the children were thrown to the river. Lachatzenu Zuatchak. There are various ways to explain this. Some say means the pressure involved. The quota had to be met. As it says in the Parsha Shmos, when the power took away the straw and maintained the quota, that's a particular dimension of the tzara, the pressure that went into it. Others say it means that they were living in very cramped quarters. It says that they were in Goshen when they first came down. Then it says that Timoi Ha'aretz Osam. But apparently they were back in Goshen, because during the Makos it says that the Makos did not affect the Jews in Goshen. That's where Bnei Yisrael were. So apparently the majority was still cramped in the ghetto quarters. Maybe even after they spread out, they end up coming back. They were pushed back into Goshen. The houses were small. They were densely populated. So some Rishonim say Tchak is Zuatchak, referring to the actual physical discomfort in the living quarters. That's the Lachatzenu. Okay, now we have the fourth pasuk, and it's this pasuk that's going to lead us into Eser Makos. You'll see how. So we quote the whole pasuk in its entirety, then we break it up in its parts. So the first thing is Beitzion Hashem Mitzrayim. This represents an idea that Kodesh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmo, Bechvodu Ba'atzmo, and we elaborate on that from the pasuk in Parshas Bo. It was no one else but a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and Nivelo Melech, and Nivelo Sarach. This is a very powerful idea. Kodesh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmo, Bechvodu Ba'atzmo. The Rishonim discuss from this perspective. It also says in the pasuk Bo'itin Hamashkis that there was a destroyer. So how do you reconcile that with the fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu was himself the one? You have to look at them first and see what they say on this. Now we go on with the pasuk. He took us up Yad Chazaka. So you would think it's the general idea, Yad Chazaka, with a strong hand. So we specifically isolate one of the makos, and this requires an explanation. Zuhadever. And we see that from the word Yad Hashem Hoya. In Makos Dever it says Yad. But how does it say Hashem took us out with Dever? Dever was only one maka. So Rishon talk about this. Some say that there's a medrash that Dever was intertwined with every maka. Every maka had an element of Dever in it. Thrown in Tuyazu Acherev, that has to be explained as well. What Cherev we're discussing. So the Rishonim have different ways to learn it. Some say it has to do with Makas Bechoros led to a civil war in Mitzrayim, where they knew there was an impending decree against the firstborns, and the Bechorim knew what was in store for them, and they rebelled, and they created havoc in Mitzrayim, and they took their swords, and they began to attack, you know, random people, because they couldn't imagine what was, you know, how could the authorities let this happen? They knew what was in store for them, and they ended up killing many people even before they got killed. And that's the pshat in the pasuk in Hodu Hashem Ki Tov and Kufchav Vav in Tehillim, that Melumakim Mitzrayim Bivchorehem Ki Lo'olam Chasdo. Bivchorehem, through the Bechorim, Mitzrayim also struck, because Bechorim themselves were the vehicle, and that's some explain that's the Zuh Acherev. There are other ways to learn it. That's one pshat. Mara Gadol, with great fear, Zu Giloy Shechina. That could mean the idea Hashem appeared on the night of Makas Bechoros. The Abadram also says when Hashem appeared to Moshe in Mitzrayim on Rosh Chodesh Nisan to give the mitzvahs of Hachoy Zelochem and Karban Pesach, that was also a Gilui Shechina, that Hashem came into the tomb of Mitzrayim. Why do we refer to it as Mora Gadol? So the Shechina, the presence of the Shechina, naturally elicits a sense of awe. The Migdash is the place that we refer to as Sha'os Chalavadcha B'Yira Navod, sense of Mora. But the word is also Yira, as in fear. So the presence of Hashem naturally brings with it Mora Gadol. The Osos of the Mopsim, Osos is the Mate, that they were carved on the Mate, the various Makos, or a acrostic of the Makos. So that was a vehicle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take us on Mitzrayim with the Mate. Some of the Makos, Moshe waved the Mate, some he didn't. But apparently that was an integral part of the Geula. We have to explain this better. Mopsim Zeh Adam, and we quote a pasuk that concludes with Dom Ba'esh B'Simos Ashan. So it's really one pasuk. People break it up. It's really a pasuk that goes together. Yoel. That's the pasuk. So what does it mean? Zeh Adam. So some say it refers to the oath that Moshe performed to convince Kaiso that he was chosen. Because first he had to show them one sign when he threw the stick and became a nachash and it became a stick again. And then another thing he did was he put his hand inside the cheko and it took it out, saras, and then came back again and took it out again, and then it was back to normal. And then the third thing was he took water where he was and he picked it up and it became dam. So that was not makas dam of the makos. It was that particular thing that he did to convince Kaiso. So I once thought, based on that the idea is Hashem took us out with the koch of the emunah, that Kaiso believed, because it took that oath, the third of the three, to convince Kaiso that Moshe was chosen. Now, how do we segue into Eser Makos? We take those expressions that this pasuk describes. Hashem took us out, Yad Chazaka, Zvara Tuya, Mora Gadol, also smokes in five expressions. Each expression counts for two, either because they're two words or because it's a plural. So that's the double akher. Yad Chazaka Shtayim, Zvara Tuya Shtayim, Mora Gadol Shtayim, also is plural, it's two, Mopsim Shtayim. So we have 2 times 5 is 10, and that gives us now a way of segueing into Eser Makos, which we mentioned. We have Rabbi Yehuda, who has a different formulation of the Tzachadash V'Achav. Many Rishon talk about the significance of Rabbi Yehuda's configuring it the way he did. There's certain patterns that you have in the Makos, and that's reflected in the Tzachadash V'Achav. For example, who knows a pattern of the Tzachadash V'Achav? Any patterns that you know about?
Morning.
What?
Moving
from the ground up. Good. That Maral talks about that one. Yeah. What else? Because the last ones were in the ear. Good. And then the middle. Right, that you have something else. Yeah.
That every last one didn't
have asra. Yeah. Right. There was asra for the dam tzvadeh, not the kinim. Arub dever had asra. Shechin came without. Barad arbe. Noah had asra. Choshech had no asra. B'choros just gets tagged on in that way. Another thing that's interesting to point out is that Kinim, Shechin, and Choshech, the third of the, you know, each third, have a relationship, a very interesting relationship. If you write them out, imagine writing out, spelling it with three letters, Kinim, Kaf, Nun, Mem, right? Write it out on the top, okay? Yeah, imagine, Kaf, Nun, Mem. Under that, would take Shechin. Is there a... Shin Ches Nun. Under, right, and then under that, Choshech, Ches Shin Chaf. Now notice something. You can read it this way, Kinim Shin Choshech. What else can you do? Look at this. Go down, like a crossword, right? Kinim, and then you have Shin Choshech that way. You notice? So they're intertwined. There's a relationship between those three makos, which can only see with Rabbi Yehuda Simon. You wouldn't see it otherwise if you combine it differently. Now you have this other passage that talks about the Nisim al Hayam and the multiple of five, and then we go into Dayenu. There's a lot of nice things to talk about in Dayenu in the specifics, but we'll leave that. But simply, to mention something interesting about the whole idea of Dayenu. What are we really saying? We're appreciating HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we're trying to break things down into their ingredients, into their small parts, because simply when you have a lot to be grateful for, it's very easy to lose track of the details, because thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, so do you really feel gratitude? You do, on some level. But if you really would go and reflect on what that kindness is consisting of, you would have much more reason to feel grateful, and it would come in a more genuine way. So by spelling things out, that would have been enough, that would have been enough, that would have been enough, we begin to really recognize halach has kama kama, how much we have to. It's a simple idea. Hakasa Tov requires one to be able to break things down and recognize as much as possible the nitty-gritty. The nitty-gritty is what is relevant. There's another possible makar for Dayenu that we're thinking about. There's a medrash, Gemara, and the Makos, and a few other places, and the Drashim, on a pasuk in Tanakh. I think it's in Malachi. It's a song to these words as well. Barikosi lachem bracha ad velidai. So there's a Gemara that the song picks up. Ad sheyivlu sifsosechem ilo madai. You know, the Shweki was one of the singers. Okay. Until your lips will become old, tired from saying die. That's the Gemara. Ad velidai. So much bracha ad velidai, to the extent that your lips will get tired from saying die. But I think that there's something here. You know, the Dayenu is saying, we recognize, we appreciate the more that you can, you're the beneficiary of bracha, and you start breaking it down, and you realize, my, it's like, it's endless. So much. There's so much bracha, that if you start breaking down that bracha, you realize how much there is there. Look, we have 15 here, 15 levels, corresponding to Shir HaMalos, okay? But really, at the end of Dayenu, you're getting tired also of the thing Dayenu, right? Die, you know. So that's something that you have that parallels the Chazal. Okay, then we have Rabbi Gamliel, and this is of course very, very important for the Seder, highlighting the reasons for the mitzvah Salayla, Pesach, Matzah, Maror. When it comes to matzah, we have the reason of l'ispik b'sekem l'hachmitz. The question is asked by the Ran and other Rishonim, how could they have left it to become chametz? Wasn't there an isser about yiroya? Wasn't there an isser about chilas chametz anyway? How could they have wanted to make chametz? So the Ramban learns the pasuk that differently than the way the Haggadah learns the pasuk. They had to bake it baderech as opposed to a mitzrayim, but they would have to bake a matzah regardless. But the Ran gives the answer that there was no isser bal yiroya for Pesach Mitzrayim. Lo yiroya is connected to going to Eretz Yisrael. So they were not own chametz. But they were not allowed to eat chametz, but not for the whole 7 days. They were not allowed to eat chametz for one day. That's one of the opinions of the Tanayim. Hayom etem yotzim, lo yachal chametz hayom. At the end of the parasha, it says lo yachal chametz and hayom etem yotzim. So there's a isser chametz for Pesach Mitzrayim for one day. Says the Ran, so what was Kal Yisrael's intention had they not been rushed out? They would have baked chametz, they would have held on to it for the next day, and then they would have by Yeroa, and then they would have eaten it the next day. But because of the rush, they had to bake it as matzah, which is interesting. So you see here, that's a sign of Cheirus. You're thinking about tomorrow. Right? As Avadim, all you have is the minute you have. That's all you're living. You can't think beyond it because there's no sense of scheduling your own time. We don't realize how much we're B'nai Chorin. We have our smartphones, and we have our Palm Pilots, and whatever it is. We have our calendar, and we're already thinking about what's going to be, 5 months from now. That's because we're B'nai Chorin. Klal Yisrael, the first taste of Chorin was that they were able to imagine that we're going to have our Chametz tomorrow. Because that's what it means to think as a Ben Chorin. You can think about the next day. But Hashem had plans where they weren't going to have their chametz the next day. It turned out to be matzah. Okay, and then we have the Hallel, and you have the Bracha Shagolanu. Okay, I want to wish everybody, we'll talk for a few minutes off the record, but I wish everybody...